Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
This hour, we're dedicated to two guests, and I first one up from New York, although she just red-eyed in from Los Angeles, Jennifer Yanolo from the Culinary Media Network. Thanks for taking out time with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. How are you?
Just great. Well, did you get any sleep on that flight last night?
Not on the flight, but I got a little bit when I got home.
There you go. Well, great. Well, let me offer a brief introduction for Jennifer. As a committed food philosopher, I love that title, Jennifer Yanolo has a passion for gastronomy. It flows through her veins, and her life's mission is to ignite that same level of excitement in others. The Culinary Media Network started as her personal food blog and quickly grew into an online magazine, The Gilded Fork. It was founded in 2005. Jennifer is also a published author of several books. She spent a decade in the food industry and launched culinary programs for Relay and Chateau Ecole de Chef. I hope I didn't myrtleize that French
too
bad.
No, that was pretty good.
Was it? Oh, good. We didn't even dress rehearse that. With some 100 master and Michelin-starred chefs from around the world, she's always eager to explore that passion and inspire people to choose food and wine. And the knowledge she's amassed by traveling has positioned her also as a consultant to organizations like the Bon Appetit magazine, New York City's Restaurant Week, and the Taste of the Nation. Jennifer was introduced to her now business partner, Chef Mark Tafeo, when he was doing his newfangled thing at that time called podcasting. And both she and Chef Mark's show have appeared on Sirius Satellite Radio. Jennifer's a graduate of New York University's Stern School of Business, and her culinary adventures have been featured in Business Week and the GoDaddy.com television campaign. And also in the New York Times bestseller from our mutual friend Jennifer Cashel, that book, of course, Secrets of the Young and Successful. So with that, Jennifer, thanks again for joining us. And, you know, one of the systems I use to help people redirect their careers, in fact, Marlis Hansen was with us here first spot this morning, is to help them understand their motivated abilities, and we take them back to their childhood youth. So I have to say, I absolutely chuckled galore when I read your bio, and it started out with the following line I wanted to share with our listeners. It said, when most young girls were playing with Barbie dolls, Jennifer Yanolo was playing food show in front of her mother's kitchen window, as if it was the camera. So what does your mother and your siblings, father, whomever, say today as they watch and listen to their loved one?
Well, I think they're still trying to figure out exactly what I do for a living, because all they know is that I have this website and I'm on a plane every couple of weeks going somewhere.
And that's true, that you stood in front of the window and cooked up a storm. Yes. Was that peanut butter and jelly and Jell-O, or were you into cordon bleu at that young age?
No, I had this, my mother's Betty Crocker cookbook, and back then cookbooks were sort of binder style, so I would, you know, attempt snickerdoodles and whatever I could manage without, you know, setting anything on fire. But I would watch Julia Child, and I just loved her personality and everything, so I would, you know, talk to my audience.
Well,
and she's a dramatic cook.
And, you know, I'll tell you something. There's something here, because you and I have exchanged here recently in preparation for the show, is our 12-year-old daughter, Jordan, you know, one day came home and said, my friend Nikki's watching the Food Channel. I got to figure out what this is. We are absolutely hooked on this as a family. We watch it every Friday and Saturday night. We laugh. And I can see the wheels in her head turning. And now, thank goodness she's making her own lunch. You know, the whole program, I think, I like this process. You know, it's working.
Her food, it's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the idea for doing your actual media network, though, what's the genesis of that?
Well, you know, after I finished with Relay and Chateau, I was just looking around at the food landscape. Mm-hmm. And the whole celebrity chef phenomenon was fully in swing. And I was noticing that on the Food Network, nobody was really cooking anymore, or it was a totally different style from when it first started.
Okay.
And I thought, well, where is the talk about the actual food? It was more about, like, quick, 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 and this is easy, and blah, blah, blah. And so I started really delving into the philosophy of the chefs, why they're in the kitchen, what makes them so passionate. And I wanted to write about that and tell that story. So, you know, I had started doing that. I recruited some of the chefs I had been working with to say, you know, give me your story here, because I want to tell other people. Mm-hmm. And So it really got to the passion behind the cuisine. And then when I met Chef Mark Tafoya, he was doing one of the very first food podcasts. And a mutual friend introduced us and said, you guys need to know each other. Because Mark and I both have this whole notion that, you know, we're not really so into the celebrity part of it. That really doesn't matter to us. But we love meeting people who are really intense about what they do, purveyors who, you know, treat their cheeses like little babies.
That's right.
And take really good care of them.
Oh, and really, I can have the picture of little Ratatouille holding the cheese, holding the strawberry.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's funny, too, that my claim to fame is that movie, when that movie was being made, I was working for École des Chefs, and the Pixar crew came to me and said, hey, we'd like to go into Thomas Keller's kitchen. We're working on a movie. We can't tell you what it is.
Oh, my
goodness. Really? So that whole, the kitchen in Ratatouille is modeled after Keller's kitchen.
Fabulous. Aha.
So they went in and did boot camp with him to learn how a kitchen runs and what. And so when they captured that in that little mouse, they captured the essence of that, of what a chef feels about food and when he swoons with the strawberry.
And that anybody can cook. You know, anybody can cook.
Anybody can cook, exactly.
Anybody can cook. Well, so would you care to share with us some of that insights? I mean, I happen to believe, we have a dear friend that is a chef, and he worked at a series of 5-star restaurants before he decided, I got to get an outdoor job. But we're always happy when he comes to our house and says, at Thanksgiving, I'll bring the meat. That's cool.
Sure.
But he always talks about his culinary experience as he's the artist and the designer. Mm-hmm. It isn't just, you know, the enjoyment of the savoring of the tastes. Is that some of the things you've uncovered in your years of getting to really know what's inside of the heads of these chefs?
There's that, and there's also this idea of making love to people. And I love that one of my dear friends said to me, he's like, when there are diners in my dining room, I am making love to every one of them via the plate. This is my way of showing my love and affection and my comfort for people. And so that sparked off something in my head. I thought, really?
Wow.
So, you know, I've been talking to a lot of chefs about this and a lot of cooks, and this whole idea, there's a Twitter hashtag I created called Sex on a Plate.
Sex on a Plate,
and,
yeah.
And it's about that moment where your eyes roll and you think, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever tasted.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from a chef's loving hands, and they have this huge propensity to care for people. And I think it's what makes chefs one of the most generous groups of people in any industry. You know, when there's any kind of anti-hunger thing going on, they're in. Because the idea of making people well and feeding them is such a dear idea that's close to their heart because it's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this whole idea of nourishment and caring that, you know, you're back there in that hot kitchen cooking yourself every day, basically. And they have this massive love for people, and I think it's just fantastic. That's really the core of what they do.
Well, Jennifer, one thing that was absent in your bio is, and I would ask this question, is, are you a chef?
I am not.
Okay.
I'm not a professional chef. I'm a really good home cook.
Yeah.
But I leave that to the pros, because I've been in and out of the kitchens, and I do, you know, I can jump on the line if I'm so inclined, but I'd rather be watching.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we would say on our show, because of this focus we have on motivated abilities, you know, how people are wired, that mm-hmm. your naturally innate gifts are indeed in another place. It's probably to bring to light these concepts or to demonstrate the competence to create the stage for others.
Mm-hmm. There's that, and there's also one of the things that I knew about myself is that when I am in the kitchen and it's intense, I do get a severe adrenaline rush from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that if I spent too much time, I would stay. And I know that the life of a chef is so difficult and so intense, and the hours are ridiculous, and you don't get holidays or weekends. So I knew that I had to sort of keep that capped, mm-hmm. or I'd find myself in a kitchen forever. And I really didn't want to do that.
Well, is there something that makes this particular experience, you're having founded the Culinary Network, unique from your other 10 years in, I will say, tangential space?
Mm. Well, I wanted a place to bring it all together, because
exactly,
I was trying to figure out, you know, after working with the best of the best, I sat there. I'm like, well, what do I do now? I've really, you know, I've eaten the very best meals. I've what could possibly top this? And you know, the thought of, when I first started that little food blog, never in a million years did I imagine there would someday be a network of things.
Which I think is a lesson in of itself for people to realize in your career that what you think you're doing and establishing most likely will not indeed, in the end of the day, manifest in that direction. It's guiding you in a whole different trajectory, isn't it?
And I think one of the things that has made this so great for Chef Mark and I is that we've allowed it to be pretty organic.
Okay.
You know, we would have an idea, throw it on the wall and see if it stuck. And if it did, great, then we'd add the next thing. And we've really allowed ourselves the freedom to explore and see what worked for us and what didn't.
So has anything crashed in the midst? What did you try that you then yanked off?
Well, you know, it's what's really interesting is that in new media, it's still very much the Wild West.
Exactly,
so,
right.
We had one of the first big podcasting sponsorship deals, and things were great. And we were like, wow, we can make some serious money doing this. But then the market tanked, and nobody really knows what the landscape looks like anymore. So we're like, okay, now where do we shift gears? We've always run really lean and mean. It's the two of us and a few other people who help us so that we can turn on a dime and say, okay, let's open our online culinary classes, which we just started.
Yes,
so
in fact. I would make note of that. Yeah, you might want to describe for our listeners what is out there on culinarymedianetwork.com to understand the diversity that you've now organically let flourish.
Got a lot of stuff there. Well, we have the usual blog posts and articles and recipes, but we also have audio and video programs from all of our travels and chef interviews. And, I mean, we've traveled around the world at this point. So there are a lot more places to go yet. And we try to get into what's really interesting in the local food scene and show people what there is on offer if they go to a location. So that's a big part of what we do.
But so for anybody, Jennifer, excuse me, to help us. Mm-hmm. So for anyone planning a trip and saying, gee, I'm going to Argentina, the one place to go, you can hit your drop-down menu and there's Argentina. And in fact, I'm even thinking for my kids when they have to do these country projects, you know, in their middle school, they can go right to the Food Network, get the recipe, and there we go, something to take into a treat for class.
Well, and the great thing is we've created feeds on iTunes for each location so people can find them. We've called that series CMN Travels, which it got nominated last year, actually, for a Tasty Award, which we were really excited
Congratulations.
About.
Congratulations, yeah.
Thank you. But aside from that, we also found that people do want to learn how to cook, but at first they were a little intimidated by what we were putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that, maybe we need an in-between part here without, you know, we're not about 30-minute meals necessarily or anything like that. But we thought, well, why not give people the fundamentals? Because we want to give them the building blocks so they can be creative and go play in the kitchen and play with their food as much as possible.
And I hear a very common thread here. We had a woman who imports and exports knitting implements and the like from China. And lo and behold, and this might come your way too, she got a call out of nowhere from the people that host Penguin Books that do the Idiot's Guides. And she said, they asked her, could you do an Idiot's Guide to knitting? And to your very point, it was the idea of taking it really down to the basics and stripping away some of the intimidation factors.
Yes. And it's interesting because some people would write to us saying, like, your recipes scare me, or, well, you guys are chefs, so there's no way we could do this. And I thought, hold on a second.
Right.
We are, you know, I mean, Mark is a chef, but I, you know, I'm self-taught. And so we decided there were a couple of things we could do, and one of them is our new cookbook, which is The Gilded Fork, Entertaining at Home. And we put together 12 menus. So it's a year's worth of entertaining menus, and we have all those notes, you know, about purchasing ingredients and how to use them and how to decorate the plate and what the wine pairings are. So we've made it really easy for people. And this is really our focus going forward, is giving everyone the building blocks so that they can all play, so that it's no one just seeing us cook, but they're cooking with us.
I'd like you to let me ask you a bigger question here, and because you're so deep into this industry and you've been into it such a long time, can you answer me why did my 12-year-old daughter and the younger kids latching on to watching the Cooking Channel? In fact, we mentioned this to other friends of ours, and come to find out that their grandkids that are ages 5, 6, and 7, they're enthralled with the Food Channel, which I think is great instead of video gaming and cartoons. But ever a thought as to why this fascinates us as human beings?
Well, you know, there are a couple of generations that kind of lost that cooking piece.
Okay, you're right.
Boys and girls. And with so many parents working and moms working especially, nobody was cooking anymore. And so now it has become this sort of uncharted territory.
Yep.
And so people are like, oh, I want to learn how to do this too.
It's like a revival.
It is a revival. And I think that accompanied by the recession and everything that's happening, people are realizing they have to cook.
Sure, right.
They need to be able to know what's going on in the kitchen. And so I think all of that together, you know, and that's part of our book, too, is entertaining at home. Invite your friends in so you can all play together. And so it's this new territory for people to explore and create and be creative. And, you know, all of the food varieties we have available now makes it a huge playground for people.
I'd also add that I think this hunger for returning to a sense of community and, you know, the fact that houses don't have front porches anymore and there aren't sidewalks to walk, or if they are, we're not walking them, that still that the home can become a home. And one of the greatest ways is through the kitchen experience.
Well, and even looking at the design trends now, kitchens are becoming, once again, the center of the home, but they're being integrated with living room space so that while you're cooking, people can be sitting, talking to you as you're doing your thing in the kitchen, or people can join you. It's a very open environment. And I love seeing that because that means that we're getting back to that focus of the hearth.
And I think also then the connection between multiple generations, because you offer something that is not generation or gender specific either.
Correct. Correct.
And in fact, the chefs now, is it an equal balance of men and women as you go around the world, or still, you know, a bias towards more men? Yeah, not there yet.
It's not there yet, but a lot more women are opening their own restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've kind of, you know, and it's funny, too, because we've seen some women say, look, there's never been any gender barrier in the kitchen. I've never known it. Others will say, oh, it's been horrible. So it's so individual as an experience. But I think in the last generation or so, there's a slew of women now in culinary school. So it is changing. It's absolutely changing.
And what would your advice be to perhaps our young people that are listening in that says, you know, gee, how could I indeed pave a way in a career in the culinary business? What do you think all makes up someone who ends up being either a good chef or someone who could aspire to be at a magazine or start, you know, Culinary Media Network 0.5, you know, when you retire and move on to your next big entrepreneurial thing? What's the fundamentals you'd advise people who want to step into this career space?
Well, you know, it's funny because in Jen Kuchel's book, we talk a lot about this, about taking a taste. And for me, I literally have done pretty much everything there is to do in the culinary world because I wanted to find my spot. And I wasn't finding it, So I worked in kitchens. I did the events. I did the PR side. I did the executive side. And you really have to see where you fit because there are so many different kinds of opportunities. You know, do you want to sit right? Okay, that works for a lot of people. Do you want to travel? You know, do you want to be a restaurant critic? And it's really a matter of trying everything and seeing what really moves your soul.
And I think also never giving up, because there's so many people that'll say, well, you can't make money of that. Or, gee, you know, there are millions of people that go to chef school every year or whatever. And you say, you know what? If you're very clear with your intention, you're going to drive it and create it.
Sure. Well, and I think it's also knowing when to give up smartly.
Ah, very good point. Yeah.
You know, knowing that, oh, okay, yeah, maybe this doesn't work. You know, for us, for example, the advertising model didn't really work so much for us back then, you know, a couple of years ago. So we're looking at other things, other ways to make money. So it's really being open to what is possible, but don't bankrupt yourself in the process. Know when it's time to get out. And I think that's the hardest lesson in business to learn. Especially for an entrepreneur who's got this burning passion, like this will work. Well, it may not.
That's right. Or you're thinking, I'm going to stick with it one more week because the big kerpow is coming around the corner at me. Well, I'm speaking again with Jennifer Yanola from the Culinary Media Network. So, Jennifer, you've traveled the world. You've interviewed chefs. You've probably gone through countless experiences of sitting down with kind of the foreign language smile, not having a clue what they just put in front of you. So tell me about maybe some of the most exotic meals or things you were glad you didn't know what it was while you were eating with it. But afterwards, you thought, okay, that was wild.
Well, thankfully, I've known everything that's gone in my mouth. We were in Peru last year and had cuy, which is guinea pig. And so, you know, so you have to kind of just prepare your head for that. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay at this. Mark is much better at this. Mark is a very adventurous eater. He will try pretty much anything. A lot of times if it's something I don't really want to try, I'll hand it to him. Like some of the street food in Peru, he had, you know, sort of the intestines and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I accidentally ate haggis.
Which I have no idea what that is. What is that?
It's a Scottish specialty. It's the stomach lining, stuffed with all sorts of things. And my mother is Scottish, so both of us sort of have this pact that we're never eating haggis. And so we were having high tea in this castle in Scotland, and there were these lovely little fried balls in a dish. And I thought, oh, those look like either, you know, some kind of falafel-type thing
or whatever.
So, you know, I popped it in, and I thought, oh, this is actually quite good. It was creamy inside. I thought maybe it was a risotto ball or something. And then afterwards, the chef said to me, so how did you like the haggis? And I said, excuse me? He's like, yeah, those are haggis. I'm like, oh, curses.
So you had
been spoiled.
You've been spoiled, but I think the other piece of it, yeah, sometimes you just don't want to know. Isn't that interesting? Well, Jennifer, any thoughts and predictions? You know, as you said, what you're doing here is organic. I love the pun, by the way, that you're growing something and you're in that food space. Anything near term or further term or dreams on your plate where you want and can see that your endeavors are taking you?
Oh, yeah. We're embarking on the next phase, which is, the basis of it is this whole idea of playing with your food. And we are now coming off the digital page, and we are going to take this, I hope, around the world, but we're starting around the country with workshops and events and things that really get people engaged with us, with the food, really creating a new level of appreciation for it, for kids, for parents, for lovers, for all of that. So that's kind of our next big idea, and so we're heavy in the planning stages of that now, and we're totally excited about it.
Well, I think that's I had a recent experience myself. I enjoying radio, and you've done radio a lot, and web-based seminars and the like. But you know, every now and then, suddenly I had an opportunity to stand in front of an audience of 250 people, and I hadn't done it in a few months, and suddenly dawned on me. Oh my gosh, that's right. The getting that visceral feedback immediately from the reactions of your audience or those you've got engaged, it takes your ability to communicate and convey in a totally different place.
It does. And I discovered it really because, you know, we've done a lot of social media stuff. We have a lot of friends on Twitter and everything. But being able to actually talk to them one-on-one, face-to-face, just takes it to a different place. And, you know, having them there with you, sniffing things and touching ingredients and seeing the colors, it really changes the dynamic.
Absolutely. Well, Jennifer Yanola from the Culinary Media Network, thank you for joining us. For our listeners, it's culinarymedianetwork.com as well as her blog at foodphilosophy.com. Thanks a lot, and you have a great afternoon
there
in New York. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it. Going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.